It was the late, great media theorist Marshall McLuhan who said that first we shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. He went on and said, we become what we behold. Any of us who have used social media know that McLuhan was spot on, and if we don't know it, we need to. Today, we take a look at how social media is shaping and misshaping us as moms, dads, kids, and youth workers. Listen in as we chat with Sarah Zylstra about her own story and her practical and gospel-centered book, Social Sanity in an Insta World, on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at CPYU, and I'm looking forward to a great conversation today with someone who's not only very well informed about the topic we'll address, but has produced and continues to produce some great, great resources for individuals and families and youth workers to use related to this. We'll get to that in a minute. The topic we're going to hit relates, as many of the times the conversations we have here on Youth Culture Matters relate to matters of technology and social media. And this is really on my mind. Well, it's been on my mind for years just because of questions we've been asked over the years about culture. When do my kids get phones? What is this doing to us? Oh, man, I can't let go. I feel like I'm just tethered to this. And so we started here at CPYU, a digital kids initiative, which I know many of you are familiar with. And over the course of the fall, September, October, November, I've been privileged to be able to be part of a small team, a couple of us, who are co-teaching a class at our church here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, on Tony Renke's book, 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. And you're familiar with that because we've had Tony on the podcast to talk about the book. And it's been fascinating to me to see this adult education class. You know, each and every week, the room is more full. And we have high school students coming. I think we've even had some middle school students coming. We've got grandparents coming. We've got people with flip phones coming, people with no phones. And the mood in the class after about 3 weeks has been, you know, this is really helpful. And we're sensing more and more vulnerability among folks. And we've gotten that both from men and women in the class, including the teenagers. But one of the things that we have great concern about, because I hear this all the time, I have two daughters, you know, hey, this stuff is consuming me, my time on Instagram. And we, you know, kids with TikTok and Snapchat, they don't even know they're being consumed by it. But adults, I think more and more are realizing this is an issue. And we're hearing in many ways, not only is it a concern for all, but especially our girls and our women. Social media in so many ways can devour us. And we've never said here that technology is evil. We want to have a great theology of technology and the wonder of how people image God and make these tools. But as we've said before, we can use these in one of two directions. We can use them to bring honor and glory to the kingdom of God, to serve God, to glorify God, or we can use them to bring honor and glory to the kingdoms of the world, the flesh and the devil, what we read about in the scriptures there. And so many times we just get wrapped up in that. And I think every single one of us, myself included, are aware of this. So as part of the class, I discovered this book. I forget how it came on the radar. It's published by the Gospel Coalition, an organization that we here at CPYU love. And it's titled Social Sanity in an Insta World. And it's really written for women, and it's written by women. And we've asked the editor of the book, who's actually written much of this, Sarah Zylstra, to come on. Sarah, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. What an important topic.
Yes, and we're so glad that you've addressed this. I know that you've got background writing not only for the Gospel Coalition, you're the faith and work editor there, but you've written as well. We'll hear more about some of that. I'm excited to know, you know, your pedigree, Dort University, Northwestern University, just your as a journalist and as a writer, You do live with your husband and two sons in the Chicago area where you're part of the Orland Park Christian Reformed Church. We want to give them a shout out so folks can go visit that church, you know, from Chicago. But for folks who aren't familiar, before we get into the book, would you tell us a little bit about the Gospel Coalition? We're familiar with it here, but we want to be sure people know about what's happening there.
Absolutely. So the Gospel Coalition was founded in 2005 by Don Carson and Tim Keller, who were looking for, they were watching society around them, culture around them, and they were looking for a place that would support local churches with resources, which we say trusted and timely, winsome and wise resources. So the whole point of the Gospel Coalition is to support our heroes, basically, are the local churches and local church pastors. And so to that end, we do conferences, and then we do trainings, we do regional gatherings, we publish books, and then, of course, we do the website at which we are trying to put up articles that would support, encourage, instruct the church in America, but also the church around the world. And we have global coalitions. So one of my favorite things is that the way that good theology has been able to move over the internet into other countries as well. And so we've got about probably more than a dozen of these coalitions and websites that are also popping up in other countries too.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, you know, when I read your bio, I saw you're the faith and work editor for the Gospel Coalition. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm guessing you've got a lot that relates to, you know, calling and vocation and the importance of that. And we've addressed that here on the podcast in the past because we think that that is largely overlooked not only in the church but specifically in the world of youth ministry and parenting, that we get that wrong. So tell us a little bit about that because I'm sure there are some incredible resources you've been a part of producing.
Yeah. So I like working. I come from a Dutch Reformed background, really strong on Abraham Kuyper and every square inch, really strong on thinking about that there isn't a divide between sacred and secular, but that all of our work glorifies God. He made the whole world. And also the beautiful way that you can see the web of trade, even in economics, right? Like that we trade things with each other, and it works so much like the functions of a body system. If you think about the lungs and the bloodstream and the immune system, and all the way that God always makes systems that connect together, or plants connect together, and to watch like trade and economics connect together, kind of in a way that the body does, is beautiful, and I think evidence of God at work. And so, there's all kinds of stuff on the Gospel Coalition that you can go and look at. One of my favorite things is a column that we run called Thorns and Thistles, which is basically like a Dear Abby. So like questions about just everyday boring old work questions, like how do I witness at work, or how do I handle it when my manager is not a Christian and is asking me to do things I'm not interested in doing? How do I handle conflict? How do I know exactly what you're saying? How do I know where to live and what job to do and what I'm called to do in this world? How can I sort through all of those things? And then, if anybody wants to dig through some of those or skim through there and see if they've got any questions that we've answered, or let me know. If you think of other questions, we can get those answered too.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned Abraham Kuyper, you know, because I'll just say it strongly, he was right. You know, I truly believe that. And as I've gotten older, you know, just knowing how I've been trained and comparing what I've learned about Kuyper and how faith relates to every square inch of life, we talk about that here at CPYU, you know, youth workers, parents. It's not just about coming to know Jesus. It's sanctification has to be tethered to justification, and that's the application and the interweaving of faith into all of life. And certainly, this is where our topic today, you know, it's important for us to address this because, you know, I lament this all the time. I'll say it again because it really bothers me when I hear this because I think we're really missing it. When I talk to youth workers, or I talk to parents about, you know, how are you helping your kids apply faith to life? You know, identity, vocation, calling, gender, sexuality, marriage, play, relationships, social media. Many of them say, you know, I don't talk about that stuff. All I want to do is see my kids come to know Jesus. But the thing is that Jesus has something to say about all of that. The scriptures speak to all of life, and that's where Kuyper was so right. And this is where this book comes in that you've edited. So I want you to talk a little bit just about the genesis of that, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the book.
Yes, love it. I'm going to jump on your Abraham Kuyper every square inch there just for a second and say it's important to me that he says inch. Like sometimes we think about God's calling for us in these big, giant ideas and we can't hardly get our head around them, especially if you're an 18-year-old kid. But if you're thinking about God being the God of your morning routine or God being the God of your English homework, that's just so much more manageable in terms of how do I do this and how do I wash the dishes to the glory of God? Well, with a cheerful heart and with diligence. And so if you stop thinking about such, you know, God being the God over the whole universe, which of course he is, and remember that he's also the God of the inches, and that's kind of down on our level, then I think that's helpful for taking a first step.
Mm. That's awesome.
So social sanity in an Insta world. This was not really on my radar. I was on social media. I wasn't super comfortable there. I didn't know what to do about it. And then I have a friend named Laura Whistler who runs a ministry called Risen Motherhood. And I was sitting with her at a table with her and some other girls at the Gospel Coalition's Women's Conference in 2020. And she said to me, Sarah, you have to do a book on social media, because she was seeing women. Her demographic is mostly like young mothers, so 20s, early 30s mothers. And their interaction with social media was really troubling with her. She's like, they get on there, and for her, she was seeing them follow people who maybe had Jesus in their bio, but it didn't have good theology, or much more like in the you do you, sort of the cultural Christianity, but very loose Christianity. And she was worried about the discipleship, the way that they were being discipled by being online. And you don't think about it that way, except for the amount of time that you're spending online, it disciples you more than almost anything else in your life, just because of the number of minutes that you are on there. And so she was watching them be discipled in a way that she didn't think was helpful. And she was like, write a book about it. And to which I said, no, you write a book about it. And then after a while, we thought through, like, it would actually be, first of all, great to have a bunch of women each speak to their strengths. But then if you do a multi-author book, you can also do it a lot faster. And we knew it had to be fast if we were going to write something about social media, which is changing constantly. And so in about a year, we pulled together Social Sanity in an Insta World, where Melissa Kruger and Jen Wilkin and Ruth Cho Simons and Laura Whiffler and Emily Jensen and a couple other girls each took a chapter to talk about different issues relating specifically to young women and social media.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so good. And as you're talking there, I'm thinking about one of the guys, one of the theorists that we quote so much here, who I don't think he was very highly respected when he was living and writing and saying these things, is Marshall McLuhan. Who, that one great quote from him, besides, you know, we're familiar with The Medium is the Message, or the title of his book, The Medium is the Massage, as they got that wrong on the cover. But when he would say, you know, first we shape our tools, and then our tools shape us, we become what we behold. And that sounds like what it is you're trying to address. And we don't really know that this is happening till, you know, we stand back and something takes us out of ourselves and we see ourselves. And we start to lament this. And this is part of your story in the introduction, in the beginning of the book. Can you talk a bit about that? And just not only one of the things I really loved about this, I mean, I'm like three pages into it. I'm going, oh, my word, this woman, this woman is bearing her soul. She is saying what all of us need to say. She's just being incredibly honest for you to admit to everybody that you have to have your husband shut you down. I mean, talk about this. This is, it's helpful. It's freeing in many ways because you're saying what many of us understand about ourselves, men and women, but responding as well in that every square inch way.
Mm. Yeah, I am not stronger than social media. And, you know, when you think about all the billions of dollars and psychologists that were hired and economic decisions that were baked into the system, you come to realize that social media isn't a neutral tool. It's not like a hammer, because a hammer doesn't say, pick me up, pick me up, pick me up again, pick me up again, which social media is doing. So there is a little bit of a warfare situation. Maybe that's too strong to say, but when you go to it, there is somebody on the other end who's working just as hard as they possibly can to make you stay there. And they do that through the like button, and they do that through the news feed, and they do that through all kinds of ways. But to understand that you alone probably aren't strong enough to stand up against what you're facing here. So yes, for a long stretch of time, my husband would lock me out. I gave him my password, and he would lock me out during the week, and I would get on and scroll on Sundays. Now, in the time since we have published the book, about 6 months ago, when I was working on a podcast called Scrolling Alone, I got scared enough about social media that I got off altogether. Which is to say, I asked my husband to get me off altogether, because I knew that even if I went on there to try and get off social media, I would just start scrolling and think of a reason why I would have to stay on. And so I have been completely off my accounts for about 6 months at this point in time.
And what's that been like? What's changed for you?
Oh, gosh. So much has changed. I think it is a little bit like before I was running around with the brakes on all the time, and it's like someone took the brakes off. Or it's like someone... I feel a lot more energy now. It's amazing how tiring it is to be on social media, because it's running in your brain is running it in the background all the time. Social media takes up, not only are we on there, an American, for an average of at least 2 hours a day, but after you get off, you're thinking about it longer than that. Like, oh, wasn't that interesting that person posted that? Or maybe you're talking to your friend or your spouse, or it's just running in my mind of like, I wonder how she did that. Or, you know, I should look that up too. Or it's just, there's more thoughts that come out of it. All of those things take you away from your everyday actual life. So another thing that I've noticed is I've been much more attentive to and interested in my life. I'm not so much looking for an escape all the time anymore. I'm more interested in my children's conversations. I'm more interested in what my husband has going on. I'm even more interested in the everyday, like, duties of housekeeping or, you know, doing my own work. I'm much less distracted even during the work day, because I'm not taking social media breaks to hop online all the time anymore. I work from home, so in those times I'm running a load of laundry or making a thing of lemonade, or but I'm not popping online all the time. And it has changed my own quality of life tremendously.
Yeah, your sons. How old are your sons, if you don't mind me asking?
Sure. I've got a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Okay, so in the midst of this, were they, you know, obviously your husband, you know, is aware of what's going on. What about your boys? I mean, did they notice this? Did they ever say anything about it? Because we're seeing research now where as kids are coming of age, and even younger kids are saying, you know, my mom and my dad are spending too much time there and not with me. Did you get any of that feedback at all from them? I'm probing here because you were so vulnerable.
No, that's a great question. They haven't said anything out loud to me about that. Now, I'm going to say there is a difference, a couple things. Number one is that just because I'm not on social media doesn't mean I'm not on my phone too much, which means that the next step in my life is going to have to be, there are other things, you can check your email on your phone, there's other things you can do on your phone. So the phone itself is also a problem, and that's got to be the next thing that I'm working on. The second thing is that it's different. Social media functions differently for boys than for girls. So neither one of my boys have ever been on social media or particularly interested in social media, and that has not been a social problem for them at all. Being a boy, no, it doesn't matter for their social lives if they're on social media or not. I think if they were girls, that situation would be different.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. Finish up what you were going to say there. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to, so that, yeah, that was all.
Yeah. Have you, before we take a break, let me ask you this question. I've got a million other things, you know, in my head spinning around here to ask you after we come back, but do you have borders and boundaries? Have you set up borders and boundaries for your boys on the phones? And, you know, how has that worked itself out? Because it's always good to hear, you know, you are completely aware and self-aware and probably highly vigilant on this, which probably, you know, your boys are probably going, why do I have this mother when it comes to this, right?
Yep.
But what would be borders and boundaries? And I'm sure they know you love them, right? I mean, So talk about those, and then we'll take a little break. I want to hear this.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you how weird it is. So we got my oldest a phone a while ago, like when he was in eighth grade or something. And I wonder now if it was too soon. My youngest is now in eighth grade, and he doesn't have a phone at all yet. But what we do for them, because I think that for boys, video games in many ways is the equivalent of social media for girls. You're kind of creating your own world. There are influencers. There are dreams that someday you could make a lot of money just by playing on it or making, you know, an Instagram feed that would make a lot of money. And so I think there's a lot of parallels there. So my boys don't, we don't have any systems and they don't play any video games.
Wow. Now, how about now the eighth grader, I got to ask this. He's probably talking about his older brother and what happened for him when he was in eighth grade.
Yeah.
These are the struggles every parent deals mm-hmm. with. So it's good. So good to hear you talk about this, helping us with this.
Yeah. Well, you know what I noticed in him, and he used to do, we used to give him like, he could have 45 minutes of video game playing a week, like on a computer game. But this is what I noticed is that that never brought out the fruit of the spirit in him, not once. It was always, when we got done, it was whining or complaining or wishing he was on longer. He looked forward to it like a lot, but then when he was playing it, he was stressed out about it. He wanted to do better, then he was done, and it was always a fight about when he was going to be done with it. And finally, it was like, there's no godly fruit here. And so just from a response to that, my husband and I were like, what if we tried a screen-free summer? And it worked great because after that kind of got out of his system, he's outside playing. Now, here's the thing I will tell you if you went this route. Then you have to spend your money on him if you're not spending it on video games, on things like a bow and arrow or a bunch of Rubik's cubes. Or like you can't just say you don't have anything. You're investing in other toys and imagination games for him.
Yeah.
That he can do something else, a basketball, all the other things that he would need.
Yeah.
And so he's just been, now they both like go outside and play sports after dinner and read a lot of books and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's so good. So what you're recommending there is alternatives. You don't just remove
yes.
and leave the vacancy. Good, healthy alternatives that push them into good things. And I just want to say this. One thing that you just said, Sarah, that I think is powerful and is a great reminder for all parents is, you know, if you're wondering, is this good for my kids? Is this bad for my kids? That whole, man, when I shut down, am I seeing the fruit of the spirit or am I seeing something opposite? That is excellent. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I've got all these questions and I want to hear more about the book. We're talking to Sarah Zeistrahl about social sanity in an Insta world. And it's a great book. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to Youth Culture Matters and would like to support the ongoing efforts of this ministry, you can do so by visiting cpyu.org/giving to make a donation. Your prayers and financial support make this podcast possible.
Well, welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're having a conversation with Sarah Zeistrahl. Boy, I botched her last name before that last break. I apologize for that. I was just trying to get to that break and messed up. I just want to tell a little story real quick because I got a hunch. During the break, Chris Wagner looked at me and said, my kids, this is great, but my kids are not going to like this podcast, right? Because this is the stuff that pushes back. And I love the story. This was a few years ago. I went into Kmart. In town here, which no longer exists, by the way. I think technology killed them. I don't know. But I went into Kmart, and as soon as I walked in, I see my buddy Mike, who I had not seen for years, who was my son's, one of his high school football coaches. And I hadn't seen Mike, and Mike, he sees me, he's, hey, Walt, how you doing? You know, so we're talking. And he's got his son there, who's probably about 11, 12 years old at the time. And the kid's just standing there silently looking up at me. And Mike turns to him and says to his son, he goes, do you know who this is? Points at me. And the son shakes his head, you know, no, no. And Mike goes, this guy is the reason why you don't have a phone. And so he just totally completely, yeah, I mean, he just threw me under the bus. But I thought, you know what? If I can serve people that way and save families and kids from some of the heartaches that so many have gone through, you know, that's important. So, Sarah, you know, as we were talking before the break, I couldn't help but think, and as I read the book and I read what you wrote, you know, on the front end there, I couldn't help but think that so much of what I was hearing relates to some of the language we hear about addiction.
Mm.
Can you talk a little bit about that? And again, I'm not asking you to say things you don't want to say, but, you know, your vulnerability is great. And I know you've studied this. You've looked at the research. over the years, there's been, especially a few years ago, I think it's changing now, but there was this sense, well, we don't know if you can get addicted to your technology. We don't know if you can get addicted to your phones, but there's so much research being done on the brain now that's pointing in that direction. Would you speak to that and speak to that specifically about young moms, young women, and even our teenage girls?
Yeah. In fact, I think it's worse. Studies show it's worse among teenagers, right? Because their brain isn't fully formed yet.
Yeah.
And so it matters dramatically how old you are when you get your first accounts, even when you get your phone. It matters a lot. So if you're thinking to yourself, or someone has said to you, like, oh, well, I'm giving them my kids a phone now so that they can somehow get used to it or learn good boundaries before they leave my house, that sounds good. But I would really recommend against it, because the earlier you're giving them a phone, the more it's affecting their brains. Just think of them as like soft and vulnerable, right? The older they get, the better they're going to be able to handle stuff like that. So really, the longer you wait with them, the better able they will, better they will be at being able to handle what you're giving them.
Yeah. So our habits form and deform us. How would you answer the question? You know, I've heard for so many years, I continue to hear, at what age should you give a child a phone? And then I'll go a step further and say, are there to be limits on that, you know, when you give it to them?
Yes, 100%. At this point in my life, I would say, it's almost like what time should your kid go to bed? It's different for everybody's situation, right?
I get that.
In my own particular situation, we gave my oldest a phone when he was in eighth grade. I think we could have waited actually until he was driving. I think as a 16-year-old, we could have waited until that. Because I don't know that he did use it to text with his friends a little bit, and I guess that was fine. We have locked down there is a lot you can do. We use Family Link, but there's a lot you can do to lock down your kid's phone. And we are constantly monitoring it. When I talk to Julie Lowe at CCEF, she says, when you give your kid a phone, that's not a single decision. That is the beginning of your decisions about your kid's phone and their technology use on there. So my husband and I are constantly monitoring. Not like every day, but every couple of weeks we'll look and see, like, okay, my oldest has a phone and it sends to us what websites he was, or what applications he was using, how long he was on each one. Then we can have a conversation with him, like, oh, look, it looked like this day you were on here a really lot. Man, you have this game that you're playing for like a really long time. Maybe we're just gonna, or like YouTube, do you need to watch all those highlights? Maybe we're gonna take that off your phone for a while. So we are very extra careful with him. Now, if you are a parent listening to this, maybe you're thinking, oh gosh, when her kid gets to college, he's gonna totally rebel. And it's true, maybe he will totally rebel. But I'm thinking at this point, we have just been as careful as possible, because like Julie Lowe, when my kids are old enough, I want them to be able to make decisions about their technology without already being addicted. So my goal is to get him to 18 years old without being addicted to a video game or addicted to a screen in some manner.
Yeah. And what I like about what you're saying is, you know, like some of this is still open-ended. We're not absolutely certain because the research is still unfolding. And like you said, every young person is different. There are kids who, strangely enough, are not even interested in these things. I encounter them every now and then, and I just kind of like, wow, that's, you know, how did this happen, right? But we do the best with the knowledge that we have, and certainly, you know, I think Tim Challies has written about this, right, in the next story. You know, most of us lean into our experience, but there's this wonderful, beautiful, growing volume of theory that is helpful, you know, and it's And it's coming from people many times who have no faith in Christ at all. But thank God for common grace and general revelation and the fact that people are thinking about these things. And so there's some wonderful, you know, research there for sure. But then we also have theology, which is even more important. And that's where, you know, like I go back to what you said before the break, which is still resonating with me in my mind about, you know, the evaluative benefits of, you know, am I seeing the fruit of the Spirit in my kids' lives? Am I seeing that in my life?
Yeah.
Is my good. And sometimes when we can't see it, our spouses will, in an unsolicited way, offer up their own evaluation of the, you know, whether or not there's evidence of the fruit of the Spirit in our lives. And I always say, listen to that, because perception is reality and they know us better than anybody else. So, yeah. Can I ask you this? You, before the break, had mentioned some of the differences between the way males and females use social media, and maybe you can differentiate even between generations within the genders. But can you talk just a little bit about that? I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. So women use social media primarily for community. And we know this because we did a survey of Gospel Coalition women, about 1,500 women, and we asked them, why are you on here? And they said, well, we're on here. 90%+, maybe 95%+ said, we're on here to connect with friends and family. So women come to social media because they want relationships and community. You can see that in the way that they engage, right? They do a lot more emojis. They comment on each other's stuff a lot more than men do. They even interact with like brands like Tide or McDonald's or something. They'll interact even with brands just more. They're there to create community, to create relationships. And men are more transactional. They're there for information, or they're there to find out the news, or they're there to lay out their argument or whatever it is. So they're not there quite for the same, kind of just like how men would interact and women interact in real life as well. I think women are much more, they're trying to build those relationships. They're trying to build those networks all the time. And men just run a little bit more matter of fact and back and forth.
Yeah.
Making now, connections.
Yeah. Now, so when I think about that, and I think about some of what I'm hearing from women when they talk about how it undoes them, you know, and undermines their well-being, their flourishing, mm-hmm. their joy, the rise of comparison and depression and anxiety and things like that, which those things are off the charts with our teenagers as well. There is a sentence in your book, you wrote this, about the disconnect between how we write our posts and then how we read other people's posts. Because and that really strikes me because of what you said just about making connections, building relationships. If that's what we're doing, or there's that disconnect there, somehow this isn't working to do and achieve what we would hope it would achieve in our lives. Can you unpack that a little bit? Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Absolutely.
I thought that was brilliant what you wrote there.
Yeah, you know, and if we think about this, we know this, right? I know that when I would write a post, it would be something cute my kid said. Maybe my kid only said one cute thing all week, right? But that was the thing that I put on social media. So I know that that was the one cute thing that he said this week. But if I read someone else's kid said a cute thing, I'm thinking their kid says cute things constantly. Like I am, even though I know it, I am emotionally like attributing to them this Creative Memories photo book that they're putting up on their Facebook. I am reading into that is their whole real life, even though it's very selective, even though I know that I myself am doing the exact same thing and being very selective and careful. I'm not going to put an ugly picture of myself or my kid up there. Neither would that be appropriate. But still, there's just, we can't read things, even though we know the backstory, the way that they really are,
yeah.
Which is interesting. Another thing that I've learned since this book came out too, is that our return on investment on those relationships is very small. So when we asked another question in that survey, and it was, how do you primarily communicate with your friends and family? And less than 2% of people said social media, which makes sense. If you want to say something to your mom or your daughter or your sister or your friend, you text them or call them directly, or you see them in real life. You would never get a promotion, write it on Facebook, and hope your mom happened to see that Facebook post. So the people in your real life, you're communicating with differently, which means the communication that you're doing on social media is not with that first circle of friends, or maybe even the first couple circles of friends. It's that way out acquaintance circle of friends that you're primarily communicating with on social media. And when you think about it that way, and you think, I spend 2 hours a day on social media communicating with Sammy from middle school, or Jerry from camp that one time, and I don't spend that 2 hours a day with my husband or my children or my friend on the phone. They're like, oh, whoops. The time that we're spending on the relationships is inverted. We're spending too much time on those far out relationships and not enough time on our closest relationships.
Mm. Did you just, again, curiosity, I don't know if you heard any of this, but in your conversations with women, or, you know, those who are close to you, maybe even yourself, you know, I see this, and this has never really happened to me, but I know it happens with kids as well, because I just haven't gone into this rabbit hole. I've been aware of it. And that's not to say I'm above getting into it, but just the constant swiping, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking, stories, posts, reels, whatever. You know, help us understand, like, I'm just curious about this, you know, how do people get lost in time in that? And have you heard from anybody who said, oh my goodness, you know, I looked down and I looked up an hour later? Or we had a guy, and I can share this, who admitted, he raised his hand. He shared this in our class that, just unprovoked, he said, I woke up at 3 a.m. this morning, and I just, instead of trying to go back to sleep, I was just swiping through TikTok videos and trying to be entertained.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, because again, I self-awareness is so important to step back and go, oh yeah, that's me.
This is so, so interesting. We get dopamine hits from that,
yes,
which is why we keep doing it. But here's the problem with it. Our brains are also not built to process that much that fast, because we are not limitless. We are not God. We are not built to know everything that is happening across the whole world. And social media, in fact, technology in general, makes us something of a promise, which is that you can know everything. You can be everywhere. You can be friends and have a relationship with every person. You can do like everything that you want. This social media will offer you all of that. But when I read about one after another, an ad for a shirt, and then a disaster that happened in South America, and then my friend's good news, and then my other friend's bad news, and then something really inane about something somebody ate for lunch, and you're just like one after another, and there's no time to process. Like if you told me something bad happened to you, we would sit together, maybe we would cry together, certainly we would pray together, we would think about it together. And then when the time is right and we've sat with that for a while, we move into a lighter topic and we would laugh a little bit together and then we would move on. And that would be a good and healthy way for us to process that together. But when I need to do that in a split second before I move on to the next thing, I feel busy, I feel tired, and I feel anxious. And those are things that just come from doing, which is why when I go to social media, I feel excited, like, yay, this is going to be fun. And then when I get off, I feel tired and kind of crabby, because that's what I've done to my brain, is just absolutely overloaded it.
Yeah. And that's, in so many ways, you know, that's an abuse of the way God has made us. I mean, the wonder of our brains and the chemicals that, you know, are released, they're there for a purpose. And, you know, we abuse that. We talk about that a lot. William Struthers out at Wheaton, has written a book about the male brain. I'm drawing a blank, Chris, on the title of that. But a male brain with pornography, and how all of the chemicals that are released that are actually there. And when I read that and what they're intended to do and what they do, Wired for Intimacy is the title of the book. What they do, it becomes clear. I say it this way, that God actually made men, and I'm sure it's the same thing with women. I haven't, you know, read a book on the female brain and what happens, but dopamine's there, you know, with everybody. God made our brains so that we actually become addicted, mm-hmm, to our spouse through, you know, cemented to, let's say, but I'll use modern terms, addicted to our spouse through what happens in our brains through our, you know, experience with our sexuality. So, and I can see that the same thing happens. We're not even talking about, you know, the rabbit hole, the dark places on the internet where people go. But yeah, what you're saying is so true. I wrote something down to go back to what you said about community. Do you think, you know, like Sherry Turkle's written about how we've got these great tools to draw us together. We see this anecdotally. We don't need to see the research. We see it in our own lives, that the very things that we say should connect us actually become disconnectors. And so she wrote that book, Alone Together. And we see those pictures and memes that that float around, you know, that are examples of that. Same thing with community. The very thing that should build community sometimes undermines it. I wrote this down. Is the thing that's meant to build community, and you're talking about specifically how women use this and are looking for that, it's actually encouraging competition, isn't it? And maybe covetousness more than it is community. And this is not just a female thing, all right? This is everybody. Respond to that.
100%. Yeah. 100%. It is absolutely encouraging competition. And the younger you go, so when I talk to women who are my age, they would say the biggest problem they have with social media is time, the absolute time suck that it is. But when I talk to women who are younger in college, they don't worry about time. They're worried about body image. Every one of them is struggling with body image. And that's because they go online and see everybody. I mean, it's hard enough to work your way through body image when you're just looking at the people, actual live people in your class. But when you go online, you're looking at beautiful people from all over. And not only that, but they've all edited themselves in some fashion. And so you're comparing yourself to those old 17 magazine covers that somebody had carefully made look perfect, except for now everybody can carefully make themselves look perfect. So I think competition is huge. I also have noticed this, and I don't know what to make of it. Maybe you can tell me. When I go on the Instagrams of girls who are younger, they have lots and lots of pictures of themselves, but they are alone in all of those pictures. They don't take pictures with their friends. And that struck me because I thought, when I was back in the day, I was in high school when there was no social media, and if you took a picture, you always took a picture with your friends or what you were doing. I don't think I have a single picture of myself in high school or college where I was just standing there trying to look beautiful on a beach. But now, like, all of their pictures, and I'm scrolling back, like, picture after picture, you can go through 100 pictures and you'll never see another person besides themselves. And I think, I don't know what that says, but I think that's also a warning sign.
Yeah, I think about, you know, in my travels, like, okay, so one thing just popped into my mind where I was up. We have a local college here. It was summertime. Nobody was on campus. I'll go up there to the track, and sometimes I'm the only one up there. And just in my mind, I'm going, okay, this is my track right now. This is great, right? So I see these two gals, and I had never seen them before. They came across in the parking lot. They must have been going up to the gym. I don't know what was going on in the gym. But these two gals, and they stop in the middle of the field, in the middle of the track, and the one takes the phone of the other, and then the other one stands there in the middle of the track, and I'm just praying I'm not in the background. But, you know, I'm watching this, which is even more creepy because I'm going, what is going on here? And, you know, she kind of pulled her shorts up, pulled her shirt up, exposed more skin, and then just started all these different poses. And they knew I was there. There was no sense of, you know, like, this is inappropriate or shameful. This is just what we do. And again, this is evidence of how we get, you know, get so lulled into these different things. So, oh man, this is so good. We're going to take another break.
Yeah.
And when I come back, when we come back, I want to ask Sarah a little bit more about the book. If you can just give us a little bit of a flyover of what to expect as we read that. And then I'll have some closing questions, just some real practical things to pass on to people. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Hey there, Youth Culture Matters listeners. We've been told that one of our best-kept secrets here at CPYU is our one-minute daily podcast, Youth Culture Today. Each and every weekday, we release a new episode that's timely, practical, and hope-filled, all for an audience of parents, youth workers, and anyone else who cares about kids. Here's a sample from one of our recent Youth Culture Today episodes.
Youth Culture Today with Walt Mueller of the Center for Parent Youth Understanding.
Forbes magazine recently released a summary of the findings of 32 studies that looked at how to parent children and teens in our current social media age. Among the findings was this, that a stricter parenting approach may be a better approach. The data suggests that parents who take more active parenting approaches results in better outcomes for their kids, as opposed to those parents who take a more passive, hands-off approach. The authors state that overall, studies find that adolescents report less problematic use when parents use more parental monitoring, restrictive or active mediation, or strict internet and smartphone rules. The research also found that when parents enlist stricter rules to limit overconsumption, in the context of loving and supportive dialogue, kids will spend less time using social media. This is good and encouraging news for Christian parents who take their Ephesians 6 responsibilities seriously to bring their children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord.
For more on youth culture, visit us on the web at cpyu.org.
Youth workers, do your parents a favor and get them to subscribe to Youth Culture Today, wherever they get their podcasts. Well, we're talking to Sarah about this book, Social Sanity in an Insta World, which she edited, and there's numerous contributors in here. It's published by the Gospel Coalition. I'm sure you can get this wherever you get your books or go to the Gospel Coalition website. You'll find this and other resources there. And let me mention, before I forget, that Chris Wagner here, I mention this a couple times every podcast or try to. Everything we talk about here today in terms of resources, we'll include links to these things so you don't have to be scribbling. Just go to cpyu.org, look for the player for this particular episode, and if you scroll down underneath the player, you'll find show notes that include all this. Sarah, the first chapter, which you wrote, was a history of social media. Why is this important for us to know, this history?
You know why? Because it changes so fast, and I think it's so ubiquitous. I mean, 3 billion people in the world are on Facebook, and there's 8 billion people in the world. So 3 billion, that's like almost half the world's on Facebook. It's crazy. And it feels like everyone has always been on Facebook. But if you can remember that it wasn't that long ago, and even if you can remember that it's changing now, so I was looking at a Pew survey, 5 years ago, 70% of young people were on Facebook. Today, it's only 30. 70% of young people are over on TikTok and Snapchat. And I would put money that 5 years from today, they're not going to be on TikTok and Snapchat anymore. They're going to be on something else. And so to remember to hold it loosely, this is new. This is changing all the time. There are good things about this and there are bad things about this. And gosh, what we need to do is just be still and think wisely. And before you leap into every new thing every single time, think about why am I here? What's good about this? Because there is good things about it. Am I the person that should be on this platform? What's the best use of my time? What is God calling me specifically to do? I think it helps us to slow down and to slow down and to look at what's going on, I think.
Yeah, it's really easy for us to look at others. I mean, in everything in life, but even with this, you know, as you say that, I'm thinking it's really easy to look at others. That person should not be on there. That guy should not be doing that. She should be going somewhere else. And we always look outward rather than inward. And what you're driving us to do here is really that quiet, contemplative, spirit-directed introspection that helps us understand, hey, I'm handling this okay, but this is an issue or this is an idol or this is really coming between me and living out my faith in faithfulness to Jesus Christ. And that's what's beautiful about the book, because I do think it prompts that self-examination. Can you give us a flyover of what the rest of the book is about and the ways that can do that? Who wrote what? What were some of the topics in there that we can find?
Sure. And I would start with this. Every square inch, social media is a lot more than one square inch, but God absolutely cares about what social media platforms you're on. He absolutely cares what you're saying. He absolutely cares how much time you're spending there. So sometimes we can just say, oh, it's just really small and it doesn't matter. But if God cares about every square inch and counts the hairs on your head and created atoms and string theory, then he 100% wants this area of your life too. So our chapters were set up with this. Melissa Kruger gave me sort of the structure for them. So every chapter starts off with some positive things about social media. This is the ways that we can use this, that this has been used well. And then it talks about some pitfalls, right? So the good things and the bad things. Ooh, here's things that we're seeing that just aren't as good. And it ends with biblical principles. So, hey, if you're using this, here are some ways that you can think of questions to ask yourself or practices that you can put into place that would help you use this in a way that honors the Lord. So chapter 2 is about identity and embracing your limits. It's a little bit about what I talked about earlier when social media promises you to be limitless, which is kind of what the serpent promised Eve. So to come back to, you're a created creature. God created you. Let's live inside that and embrace what the Lord made us. Jen Wilkin wrote that. She did a phenomenal job. In fact, I refer to that chapter more than any other one because it's just so good. Gretchen Saffels, who does the Well-Watered Women, wrote Emotions. Our next one, she's a deep feeler. And so she talked about guarding your heart, all those emotions, the emotions that drive us to social media, the emotions we take away from social media, and how you can best guard your heart while you're there. Melissa Krueger wrote the next chapter, which is discernment, kind of trying to figure out, who do I follow? What's the, you know, how can I be wise on here? How often should I, you know, who should I be walking around after? And that kind of leads right into influence. Laura Wiffler, who does Risen Motherhood, wrote about influence. She has studied this tremendously about how much, you guys, it's scary. Even if you're not on social media, you're being influenced by it, because it affects what's on the shelf at Target. It affects the way that mothers clean their houses and feed their children. It affects all sorts of just kind of the public feeling on different things, who you vote for, how you read your Bible. Social media is affecting all of our lives. So she writes well about that. Stephanie Greer, who's in Baltimore, wrote about relationships next. And that's a little bit about, like, hey, choosing the better relationship, like choosing the better way on relationships. How can you use social media to help you build better in real life relationships? Chapter 7 is Rhythms by Ana Avila. She wrote a whole book on time management, and so she shared some of her knowledge with us on that one. Like, how do we keep from just falling into the time suck of social media? And she, so there's a lot of boundaries in that chapter of, like, how can you be careful with that? And chapter 8 was another one of my favorites. Emily Jensen wrote about choosing to stay or choosing to go. And she lays it out not so much as, like, you don't have to quit cold turkey. You can quit for a period of time. You can quit a certain platform. Like, if you can do some discernment in yourself and pray about it and think with the Lord about what would be, where does he want you to be? And then, so quitting doesn't have to mean you quit like I do. You can quit in smaller portions. And then our afterword is by Ruth Cho Simons, who she wrote on posting well. And she's the person, I've never seen anybody post as well as Ruth. And so I love that she wrote that for us. So when you're, we're all consuming content, but we're also all creating content. And so when you're thinking about, how do I put that up there, especially if you're a girl who, or a guy who wants to be a light on social media, how do you do that well in a way that isn't off-putting, in a way that's really winsome and really beautiful? And so she covers that.
Yeah, that's great. I want to mention with that last one, we have a resource here, Chris, that we need to link to. And it's about something I wrote just as I wrestled through this personally in terms of, you know, watching how social media was being used when it first, the advent of it, especially in the world of youth ministry. I saw a lot of youth workers misusing it, providing what I thought was a really dangerous example to our students. There was no thoughtful reflection at all. So we came up with this little design for how to take a purposeful pause, and how we just, before we hit send, reply, post, whatever, here are some questions to work through. And so folks can access that and download that. Chris will include a link to that. Would you mention, because I discovered this when I was snooping around, you actually have a book club, an online book club for this that folks can access anytime, right? Tell us about that.
It's at socialmediabook.com. I hope that's where it is. I think that's where it is. Socialmediabook.com. And it is basically what I did after we wrote this book. We were like, just the same as this conversation. This is the tip of the iceberg, right? I could talk to you for like 6 more days about this. We felt like we were just at the beginning. And so what I did, there's 45 episodes. No, that's not true. There's 9 episodes that are each about 45 minutes long. That's better. And I talked to each one of these authors about their chapter. So it's not a repetition of the chapter. It jumps off the chapter. So you should read the chapter first and then come and watch it. And that author will talk more about what she was thinking, other suggestions that she has. I ask her more questions and we go in a little bit deeper.
Yeah. And I watched a bit of that. It's done very well. So, the website for the book club is socialsanitybook.com.
Socialsanitybook.com.
You know, if you'd spend more time on the internet, you'd know this. which leads to another question. Before I get to my last, we always end, I'll get you thinking about this, but I'm going to try to stump you with this one first. But I am going to ask you for a last word to youth workers, to parents, to moms, and to teen girls. But if you go back, all right, I'm sure you've thought about this. There might be a day when you go back on there. Have you thought about just how it's going to be different for you? When you step onto the landscape, you're going to have in your head, right, some borders and boundaries, some thoughts on this. You know, have you thought about that?
Yeah, you know, at this point, I don't have any desire to go back. And it's because my social media free life is so, I love it. Like, I like being engaged in my real life. I like not feeling anxious. I like not feeling tired. And so I can't imagine at this point going back. I also, so some people ask me, I'm a writer. And so some people are just like, how are you, don't you have to have a social media presence? But I didn't have a giant platform before, and I'm a writer because I write for the Gospel Coalition. So yeah. Everything I write is on that platform, and they have a far bigger following than I ever would in the first place. And in the second place, I like the idea of building up a place, a platform, either whether that's Christianity Today when I was there or the Gospel Coalition now. I like the idea of a place that will last longer than me. So I don't want to just be my own thing that eventually, you know, passes away. But I'm thinking about other people, you know, like John Piper built Desiring God, and Tim Keller built City to City, and Mark Dever built Nine Marks, and you're building this, and like, you're building something. And so that's where I want my efforts to go to. And so at this point, I don't have a strong desire to ever go back on. Yeah. I guess if I did, I would pray for a long time about whether I felt called to do that and where I felt called to go. I sometimes think of this in terms of, you know, when you go to the mission field, you don't just get on the first plane out and just land somewhere. You read books and you talk to people, you ask other people what they think. You talk with a lot of people and you pray like crazy. And then before you go, you're prepared. And you're never really 100% prepared, but you're a lot more prepared than if you just walked off an airplane somewhere. So I think if I went back to social media, hopefully I would take a long time to first prepare my heart and go somewhere I think I could do some good, and get the input of people around me that they thought I would be uniquely created to do good in that unique space. And then, you know, put all those things in place that missionaries do, the support groups and the prayer partners and all the things that you do when you're on the mission field and you're trying to stay tethered.
Yeah. Boy, that you're talking about accountability. And I think that for all of us teenagers, young adults, adults, young moms, young dads, we need that in every area of life. It's so easy to get on get on social media, get on the internet and just put things up. You know, something you said there about your hesitancy sparked this thought, and you know, over the years I've talked to youth workers about this, certainly years ago when they were really jumping onto this and trying to build their following, which, man, that's dangerous, right?
Yeah.
To build a following, and I would say to them, you are not a brand. You are not a brand. You are a human being made in the image of God, and you don't need to be a brand, because once you decide you're a brand, now you've got to build your brand, and you become enslaved to your brand, and that brand becomes an idol. And
absolutely,
I've seen it. We all feel it at some point. And there's this competition. You know, we run an organization here. You're working for the Gospel Coalition. You know, how do we get this message out? That's a good desire, but sometimes those good desires go down some dangerous roads. So we always end with this, Sarah. Just some good practical advice and some wisdom. You've given us so much. So I know you've spoken to everybody already, but let's start with this. Teenage girls, a sentence or two to them.
Oh, girls. Go listen to the Scrolling Alone podcast. I think you will really like it. Some super smart girls from Berkeley are on there. B, the main message of this podcast, I'll just tell you in one sentence, and it is this. If you are looking for a good life, if you are looking to know how to be good, how to do good, how to know good people, you're not going to find that online. You find that in the Bible. You find that in your local church. You find that in real life relationships. Jesus is the one who gives you a good life, not Snapchat, not Instagram. That those are not places where you're going to find the good life.
Yeah, I said girls, and you just spoke to everybody there. That was really that was good. Yeah. How about is there a word specifically for young moms? You've walked this. Yeah.
Mama, I get it 100%. You're lonely. You're at home. You want to reach out. Every minute that you are on social media, even if your kid is napping, is a minute that's taking you away from your family and your children and your husband and your home. And I know it's hard because it's just so easy to escape a little bit. But if you can escape into an audiobook, or you can escape into a nap, or you can escape into, think about a creative thing that you like doing. Don't just shut down Instagram, but get into your own life. The deeper you reach into your own life, and the more you think about, gosh, how could I make dinner time better for our family? Or, man, could I change my routine over here so that things flow more smoothly? Or, oh man, I always kind of wanted to do some writing. Could I do a little bit of writing? The more that you dig into your actual real life, the more that social media will fade, and you'll be able to see it more and more. For it's just taking your time. It's just cotton candy, and it's not giving you back anything. Or the pleasure that it's giving you back is not even a fraction of the time and effort that you're putting into it. It's a bad return on investment for you, Mama.
Yeah, good. I like how you started both of those, to the girls and the moms, with, oh. That was good, because it got us ready, like, yeah, I better listen to this. Okay, so, all right, can you start one for youth? The last one I'll ask is for youth workers. I mean, these influencers who are walking alongside parents. Any good word for them?
Yeah, I wish I had more wisdom, because I think for them, they're in a unique position that they need to be on Instagram watching their own, what their kids are doing. And yet, what a corrosive place for your own soul to be. I would just be so extraordinarily careful. I would set up a lot of boundaries. I would take a lot of breaks. I would talk with my kids a lot about social media and their own boundaries and breaks. I'd do breaks and boundaries together with them. I would try and get them off their phones as much as possible into real life discussions and coffee and paintball and, you know, goofing around with their friends and going to a football game together, or just whatever it is. I would get those kids in real life relationship with you just as much as I possibly could. They're lonely. They're not getting this somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. You know, building community among kids. And we've heard this, you know, kids would go on a retreat and the youth pastor would say, all right, we're leaving the phones at home, or we're putting the phones down. Of course, protests from parents. You know, do parents not understand that there's a phone at the camp, that the youth pastor has a phone? You know, I mean, do parents understand you're getting a break for a weekend? But the kids, they feel like, you know, you've ripped off an arm or a leg, or both arms and both legs, and are left with nothing to do. But like you, when they start to experience it, they see what they've been made for. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I'd say to youth workers as well, you know, I go back, you really got me thinking when you talked about giving your, you know, get like a bow and arrow, giving your son a bow and arrow and sending him outside. Man, this summer we were on vacation, and my son gave his 7-year-old a bow and arrow that he brought. And I just wanted to stay in the house when he was out there with that thing. But it was, you know, it was good. He's into that. He's into fishing, outdoor stuff. So anything to, you know, replace it. Sarah Zylstra, this is so good. And I very much appreciate it. We recommend the book again, Social Sanity in an Insta World. Great contributors. Sarah gave us a great overview, and we're grateful for what you do. We'll be watching what you put up on the Gospel Coalition site in terms of what you're writing. And we did tell Sarah during the break, anytime you have something that you think our folks need to hear on Youth Culture Matters, let us know, and we'll get you back on here. So thank you so much. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you so much. What a joy to be here. It's so encouraging and refreshing to talk about this in a thoughtful way with you guys. So thank you.
Yeah, we're glad you're doing it that way as well, and that's why we recommend this book. So for those of you who are listening again, go to the player for this particular episode of the podcast. Scroll down. You'll find links to everything. And as always, as everyone always says at the end of every podcast, like us, share, give us a good review. That helps spread the word about what we're doing. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.